looking back now, I realised the doctor thought I really didn't have much of a chance by the amount of secondary was there. He said to me, there's several I can wedge out, but he was concerned about one big one and he hoped it was like a, what they call a hemangiova, a shadow on my liver. I had the resection a month later and it turned out what he was worried about was, but he, my first question being the next morning was, Nola, how much did you drink? And I just looked at him. I'd never really drunk much alcohol at all. My husband started laughing. And I said, well, I'm not an alcoholic. And all he could say was, well, your liver looks like it. So my next question was, well, if I didn't drink enough to have a liver like that, why do I have a liver like that? I was also a bit concerned because I've still got clips in my liver put there by somebody that didn't know why I had a fatty liver. So that was where I started doing all my research. And I read and I read. And I started to realise that probably the toxins that I'd acquired from farming and nursing, some of the things we used to wash our hands with were pretty atrocious, didn't help me. So I had to change things. But wanting to change things and finding the way to change things aren't quite so easy.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. And we'll also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Hi, welcome back to the Retire Well, Retire Happy show with your host, Annie Nelson. And today my guest is Nola Muller. Hi, I'm Nola. How are you?
Good, thanks, Anne. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. And today it's a different story because Nola has been involved in nursing and has a background as a farmer. And so she's used to a lot of hard work. But Nola's life had a dramatic change back in 2080 with a big health scare. So Nola's here today to share her story and we will be educated on how you never know where your life is heading and you can always reinvent yourself at any age. So Nola, can you give us, set the scene and give us a background on your early life in your nursing and farming life?
Okay, I grew up in a small country town in just east of Roma, southwest Queensland. And people of our age group basically grew up on organic homegrown fruit and vegetables because all the pesticides and stuff didn't come around till about the 1960s. Mum always grew our own fruit and veggies, and I know it was a bit of a special thing when we went to the shop to buy something because she couldn't grow it that season. I went nursing in 1972. Down in Brisbane after a few years of boarding school. Finished my nursing, started straight away, did my midwifery, was married and had a son, was out of nursing for about 13 years, in which time I was farming. We had cattle and wheat, barley, so I was mucking around doing a fair bit of work in the paddock with insecticides and cattle dips because we were in an area that had ticks. And then in, oh, heavens, the late 80s, my marriage fell apart. I kept managing the place. So I think I had 500 head of cattle. I took through a drought, hand-fed them, carted water, and we sold that property and I went back nursing. I went to university and did my degree nursing. So I'm actually general midwifery and psych or mental health trained. And that morphed into a surgical nursing, which I've always liked, and then into administration. So I did some of the work with Queensland Health when they first started looking at accreditation and looking at health systems. Then I went looking at statewide planning and research to looking at the best practices across the world and implementing them into our state because we really had quite a good health system. Got remarried, shifted to a small country town, was doing community health nursing. Then we shifted up to the Burdekin, just south of Townsville, where we had a a sugarcane farm that we intended turning into a hay farm, and my husband worked very hard and did that. 2008, I was working as a rural health nurse, and when you're 55, the government sends you a bowel screen test. And because I'd been telling people for a lot of years to do that, I did the test, sent it away, didn't think of anything. Nobody had bowel cancer in our family. And I got it back, giving me a strong suggestion to have a colonoscopy. So I organised my own colonoscopy, having talked to nursing friends about which doctors had the best prep, and had the bowel screen test on the Friday afternoon and was quite happy, still a bit under the anaesthetic, and said to the doctor, "I'm fine, aren't I?" And he looked rather white, a lot whiter than I looked. And he said, "No, Nola, you've got a mass. You've got an 88 mil mass." And I went, "Okay, so who do I want to get it out?" I mean, I'd run surgical wards. I'd done the chemotherapy and I'd looked after the people. So you just got it out, had the chemo in my way of thinking. Monday morning, they'd organised for me to have the surgery on the Thursday. All I could think of was I'd written the guidelines for Queensland Health that showed that 30 days was pretty good and I was having mine in five. Had the surgery, came home, ended up back in hospital a couple of days later because I had a bit of a problem.
It's a big, big story you've fitted in there in a few minutes. So we understand that you came from a very hard-working background, having grew up in farming, and then you've had two marriages that have put you through farming, and it sounds like you were a hard worker, and then you were in your nursing career that you were luckily able to come back to, and it sounds like you were very organised and someone that, all right, come on, let's go and get this over and done with. But you must have had the brakes put on. It must have been a lot worse than you thought it was.
Well, I came home. I chose the strongest chemo I could have about 2 weeks after I'd had the surgery. And I was supposed to have, I think, 7 months chemo. And it was less than halfway through they had to stop the chemo because I'd knocked out all my white blood cells and I was not very well. I'd also stacked on a lot of weight. And retrospectively, I stacked that on in probably the 4 or 5 years as I was getting sicker, even though I didn't realise I was getting sicker. I had absolutely no signs of bowel cancer and I used to teach those signs and symptoms. When they stopped the chemotherapy, they sent me to Brisbane to have a scan and said, "You better have a look at your liver." And they found out I had secondaries in my liver. So looking back now, I realise the doctor thought I really didn't have much of a chance by the amount of secondary was there. He said to me, "There's several I can wedge out," but he was concerned about one big one and he hoped it was like a, what they call a hemangioma, a shadow on my liver. I had the resection a month later and it turned out what he was worried about was, but he, my first question being the next morning was, "Nola, how much did you drink?" And I just looked at him. I'd never really drunk much alcohol at all. My husband started laughing. And I said, "Well, I'm not an alcoholic." And all he could say was, "Well, your liver looks like it." So my next question was, "Well, if I didn't drink enough to have a liver like that, why do I have a liver like that?" I was also a bit concerned because I've still got clips in my liver put there by somebody that didn't know why I had a fatty liver. So that was where I started doing all my research. And I read and I read. And I started to realise that probably the toxins that I'd acquired from farming and nursing, some of the things we used to wash our hands with were pretty atrocious, didn't help me. So I had to change things. But wanting to change things and finding the way to change things aren't quite so easy, especially when it feels like there's cotton wool in your head. You're sort of thinking from here down. So I'd read and I really wouldn't take it in like I used to be able to. But eventually I was introduced to some people that could help me with some good research. And I have spent virtually the last 12 years just investigating how to get well, getting myself well. I got the toxins out of my body. I improved my nutrition, went back to basically a whole food, fresh food diet, and I was lucky enough to be in a position where I could financially afford to do that, and have spent the time since then studying or helping other people get well. Because there's no single cause for cancer, except there's no single cure for cancer. It's you gradually get things off your body so that you get well. And the one thing that I noticed is when I was well enough to think it through was I could track down all the things that impacted right from when I was about 3 or 4, when I started having tonsillitis in the early 50s, where penicillin was a really big thing. And so I'd have tonsillitis, I'd have febrile convulsions, I'd go to hospital, they'd give me antibiotics, I'd go home. Same thing had happened a few months later. Eventually they took my tonsils out as a 6-year-old. But your tonsils are there for a reason. They're actually your first line of defence for your body. So when you take them out, anything that slips past your tonsil goes into your lungs and everywhere else. So as a 19-year-old, I was, and a young, very healthy, I thought, nurse, I was diagnosed with chronic bronchitis. And I'd be really well until I crashed and came down with bronchitis that sometimes would take 3 lots of antibiotics to take to get over. And that went on for about, I can remember a doctor telling a 19-year-old I would be a wheezy old woman. Well, that wasn't a really good prognosis. So I went farming and had a son and did all sorts of things. But in my 40s, I was starting to get wheezy. I still didn't accept asthma. But the doctor told me that I don't care what you call it, Nola, just take the preventatives. So I started the preventatives. I also started on antidepressants because I'd let a build-up of things get on top of me. And I think the combination of those is what stacked on the weight and the stress. That would have been in the early 90s. So it was 2008 when it all banged up and I got the cancer diagnosis.
Mm. So what you seem to be saying to me is that you believe that this was a culmination of many things that have happened to you over a long period of time.
Definitely, Anne. And I'm also friends with quite a few people that have had a cancer experience the same time or before me and have chosen not to do the aggressive part that I am. We all sort of share that view. Yeah, so it's just there's lots of things you can do, lots of science you can find if you know where to look. The thing that really amazed me when I looked and started looking was the state health department paid me as a researcher, remember, to look at programs to put across our state. What I found was the research that I was finding that was helpful for me, I couldn't find on those databases. I was finding it in other places. And but that was 10 years ago. Nowadays, you actually have to be really careful what search engines you use to get a lot of data.
That's interesting. I think you might have to explain that a little bit more if you are able to.
I can. About last June, pretty well on the spot, Google blocked access to quite a few of the renowned search engines, sources of, and I'm not even going to use the alternative or complementary, any of those words, sources of information that have come from PubMed, which is a, you know, it's the science bank of stuff. But if you want to find that stuff, you can still find it if you use different search engines. And there are quite a few of them that people can use to look at things. So just because you do a Google search doesn't necessarily mean that things aren't there. And I think the other thing for people to realise is that just because it's on the internet doesn't make it right. It's any just as well as you pick up a book doesn't make it infallible. If people... The science I use, the authors that I use, the databases that I use will all have multiple references of things. And I like meta-analysis, which means that they've probably got 20 sources of information that back up what they're saying. It's not just somebody coming up with, I had a bright idea this afternoon, I think I'll put that on Facebook. Where I'm really talking about knowledge that's, as I said, based on PubMed, based on a collection of studies that have all shown the same thing. And a lot of the authors that I use won't start looking at things until there's at least 20 studies to show it, and independent double-blind studies, not just something that's run by the company that wants to promote something.
So the changes that you've made to your life and lifestyle, can you summarise some of the changes that you have made, and is that including where you live and then what you do and what you eat and your surroundings?
We actually changed from where we were living when I got sick, because I was so sick I couldn't walk up the steps of our double-storey house. I had to move into the kitchen and put a bed there. We shifted into we're on the outer suburb. We're on about an acre. I'm very lucky that I don't have a lot of internet interactions, you know, that there's a big thing on 5G and everything else that's going on. I think there's a lot simpler things that people can do. Look at what you're drinking, increase the amount of water. That is a really easy thing to do, but make sure it's good filtered water. The chlorine and everything in the, we have to have chlorine in our water supply, otherwise we'd be getting every bug going, but it's a good idea to filter it and the fluoride out before you actually drink it. And you've got to have good filter system for that. I actually use a jug nowadays. I used to have a reverse cycle one. I've got a special jug. I started using good quality minerals and vitamins. An easy thing for people to do every day is to use something like Himalayan salt, Celtic salt. We have a Murray River salt in Australia. However, I'm not saying table salt or table salt with iodine because it is as dangerous as people have told us, the medical profession tells us. It's actually, a lot of it is sodium chloride that's manufactured up to 1200 degrees, so it's not very healthy for us. Whereas our natural mineral salts are particularly good. They help us get minerals and our electrolytes in balance. Fresh fruit and veggies, as good as you can get. And there's actually something that is put out by the Environmental Working Group that's called the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. Now, not all of us can afford to eat organic all the time, and I know I certainly didn't do that. I couldn't afford to. But you can grow a few fruit and veggies yourself, and those Dirty Dozen are the ones you avoid unless you eat them organically. And the Clean 15, it doesn't matter because they usually don't have much pesticide and stuff in them.
Just briefly, what's the Clean 15?
It just about changes every year. And so if you just Google, and you actually can get that on Google, Clean 15 or Dirty Dozen, and I think it's DIRTYDOZEN and CLEAN and then 15, and you'll come up with that.
These are foods.
Well, it's like potatoes and apples and pears are things that have a lot of pesticides put on them. Things like pineapples and mangoes and things like that, and watermelons don't have a lot of pesticides or systemic poisons put in them. So they're virtually safe and unsafe vegetables and fruit.
So is it just about the food and the water, or are there other things out that we should also be paying attention to?
When somebody told me about cosmetics and things in your house, as a nurse with lots, 30 plus years experience, I very smartly said, oh, don't be ridiculous. They wouldn't be able to sell things that weren't safe. I found I was actually the one that was being ridiculous. I had used laundry powder that was environmentally safe, so I knew that when it went out of my washing machine into my garden or into the sugarcane paddock, it wasn't putting phosphates in the environment. Nowadays, I'm a lot more interested in finding out, is it safe for me? Yes, I want to care for the environment, but I care about my environment first and foremost. So that's interesting, trying to find products that are safe. I think the thing for people to remember is that just because something says it's natural or it's organic does not mean that it's safe. In Australia, our rules are so lax that it only has to have one product that's natural to be able to label it a natural, and one ingredient that's natural to be able to label it as a natural product. It can have 99 ingredients as well as the one natural that is not safe. The same as the word organic. It only has to have one organic ingredient to be able to label it organic. The price goes up, but the safety doesn't. And it's reasonably hard to find things. If you're aware that they are marketing terms, not safety terms, you start looking at things with an entirely different view. And there are companies that have fairly safe stuff, and it's all on a sliding scale is what you can use. A lot of stuff you can get rid of. There's companies that just use water to clean your house. You don't need all those cleaning products. You can just use cloths. There are companies that only have four or five cleaning products, and what they have, they guarantee is safe. Sunscreen especially is an interesting thing. I mean, there's lots of research coming out now to show that And I've been saying for 20 years we're going to end up with children that are vitamin D deficient. We need the sun. But you can have 20 ingredients in sunscreen, and all of them individually can be safe. You can put them together and the compound is safe. However, when you put that lotion or the cream, the compound, on your skin, the temperature of human skin can actually break them down to something that then goes through that tiny. Your skin is one of the best ways to deliver something into your body. If that wasn't so, we wouldn't be having patches. For, you know, it's you get a remarkably quick effect if you put a patch on if somebody's got angina or they use hormone patches. So when I was a student nurse in the 19...
We're getting towards the end of the interview now. So would you be able to summarise your message to people that you're wanting to share, and also finish up with if anyone wants to find out anything more about you or make contact with you and see what else you may be getting up to, you can let us know how people can get in touch.
Okay, and don't be fooled by advertising. Do your own research is my number of things, and you can get in contact with me. I have a very basic website called iMendMe, as in iMendMe.com, and the email will get through to me. The other thing I'm up to at the moment, I've just participated in a coaching program that I have a lot of hope for, because not everybody hits the brick wall that I hit and has to make those changes very quickly. And it's not easy to make those changes. So this is a coaching program that will become available. It's probably Watch This Space. I did it 6 months ago. It was only 3 months. I'm still noticing the changes in myself, and I have made a lot of changes. When I was sick, I lost over 45 kilos. I had gradually put some of that on over the last 12 years. I'm still nowhere near as heavy as I was. So I know what it's like to have those, you know, you just about, some people actually give up. But there's always, every day you wake up, it's a whole new chance to change your life.
It sounds like you've come out on top, and you've invested in yourself and your education, and you're a living proof that you can turn your life around at any stage. Thanks very much for being on the Retire Well, Retire Happy show. Today we've been listening to Nola Muller's story. Thanks very much, Nola.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you for the opportunity.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.